Today is Sunday. It is July 20th, 2025, and this is part 9 of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Ken Hawkins. Ken spells his last name H-A-W-K-I-N-S. My name is Tom Martin. Good morning, Ken. How are you today?
Good morning. I'm fine, Tom.
Great. And you know the drill. Ken, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
Yes.
Thank you. Ken, at the end of part 8, you had mentioned, talked about your 3 years working on the buoy patrol there on the reservoir behind Glen Canyon Dam, Lake Powell, and that you had studied to get a license to be able to work with wastewater and freshwater to get the job at Lee's Ferry. And this was 1989-ish, 1990?
Yes, correct. Uh-huh.
Can you pick that story up for us there?
Right. Well, the maintenance guy at Lee's Ferry at the time, Chester Micus, was talking about moving. He was looking to move on. And because of my river background, I thought it would be fun and thought it'd be a neat job to be the maintenance guy at Lee's Ferry, the one permanent that Glen Canyon has down there. And part of the job, about 15% of it, but at the technical side, is water treatment.
Okay.
Primarily freshwater treatment and distribution. But also, it'd be good to have wastewater licenses. So I studied for both and acquired both licenses prior to Chester moving. And so I had a pretty good shot at the job, I thought. Yeah.
And when did you apply for it?
1990.
Okay.
That's when Chester accepted a job at Bullfrog as chief of maintenance at Bullfrog.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Opened that position up.
Okay. So that was an advance for him?
Yes, it was.
Okay. And you going from the buoy operation to Lee's Ferry, was that an advance for you?
Yes, it was.
Cool.
I needed to step up to a WG-9 position.
Okay.
Right.
So, tell me about the housing there. What was that like?
Okay. We've got Mission 66 houses, three of them. Well, actually, yeah, three of Mission 66, and then a trailer or two for seasonal people.
Okay.
So they're sitting up across from the original ranger station and near the water tower. So up on that bluff above the river.
Yeah.
Yes, right.
And let me ask you about this, because I had heard that those houses were built up there so that they would be above the high water line from the Marble Canyon Dam, should it have been built down in Marble Canyon. Had you heard that before?
No, I haven't heard that.
Okay.
No. Interesting idea. Yeah. So just excellent location, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Out of way of visiting public and in terms of a great place to live. You know, the view up and down river and of the cliffs is just excellent. Wonderful place to live.
Nice. Yeah. So as you were moving in there, did you know who your next door neighbors were?
No, I didn't. I take that back. One, yes, Tom Workman. Was a Grand Canyon ranger that lived right across the street in the house that is reserved for the Grand Canyon River Ranger that works at Lee's Ferry. So Tom was there. I didn't know anyone else.
Yeah. Okay. Just trying to set the stage here. Your Glen Canyon National Recreation Area Maintenance.
Yes.
Tom is Grand Canyon National Park law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
Who else was there? Was anybody else in the third house?
Yes, there was a Grand Canyon Ranger. And, let's see, the rest of the housing was four seasonals.
Okay.
In the summertime.
Do you remember the name of the Glen Canyon Ranger?
Boy, at that time, I'd have to split. It was Vic, I'm going to say Vic Brown. Yes, it was. Vic Brown was his name.
Okay.
And his wife were there, yeah.
All right. So, lay out the land for us and your duties. Did Chester kind of walk you through what you needed to do, or did anybody do that? How did you pick things up?
Don't I wish? Right. Got there. Must have been December, January, something like that. And one of the coldest spells ever experienced down there.
Oh.
And I moved in, and of course, my primary job was to make sure we had water, treated water, pulled out of the river and ran through our treatment system, had a treatment plant, and then pumped it up to the water tower. And, it got down to close to zero and 10 degrees, that sort of stuff for a couple of weeks.
Whoa.
And froze everything. Just froze the place up pretty tight. And I had a heck of a time, and I was on my own. No, I did not have any prior instruction. I didn't have any help.
Oh, no. You mean just like where the pumps were, how the valves worked? You had no.
Right.
Oh, my gosh.
Chester ran me through the operation of the water plant.
Oh, he did. Okay.
I did have the help there. But in terms of valving and piping and that kind of thing, no. No help.
Wow.
He had moved to Bullfrog, and my supervisor didn't think I needed any more training down there. So
whoa.
That's the way it was. So a couple of tough weeks when I first moved in. Everything was frozen.
How did you thaw things out?
You just waited it out.
Okay.
Yeah, right. I was able to run water through the water plant and push it to the water tower. I kept that 4-inch line from freezing.
Okay.
But a lot of other things did freeze up. And as an example of how cold it was, I wanted to climb the water tower, go up and take a water sample to see how my residual chlorine was doing.
Okay.
That sort of thing. So I climbed the tower and opened the access port at the top, and had a weighted cup on a line, and threw the cup down there, and all I got was dink, 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 bouncing around on the ice.
Whoa.
The water had frozen in the water tower, the surface water.
Yeah.
And I still had water available to the housing area and to the campground.
Okay. So did you just test it there then?
Yeah, so I just tested it there.
Okay.
And of course, it was so cold, there was no one in the campground. Only a few of us living there. It wasn't a big demand on the water system.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you...
As you know, Lee's Ferry is right down at the end of the road where it stops at the river. And that was a place where people could cross the river. That's why John D. Lee was down there.
Right.
The Mormon Church sent him down there to run a ferry service, which was just a boat at the time, to move Mormons across the river so they could move into Arizona.
Right.
Down Arizona. And so you have that low spot in the cliffs, quite a fault line coming through there, and access to the river, and you could get across. And in the wintertime, the water was low enough that you could go across with wagons in a place called the Deadway. There was a road, essentially a road down to the river's edge, and in the winter, low enough flow that you could actually cross the river in the winter.
Okay.
So that area was maintained, and the ranch was established out there. One of John D. Lee's wives, Emma, was there to run a ranch and maintain the ferry. You know, John D. Lee was not there very often.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the church had him doing other things. And so they had the Lee's Ferry Ranch established, and it became quite a draw for tourism and quite a location that we were very proud of and take care of and have in good shape. We had about 3.5 acres of fruit trees at the ranch, plus a nice grassy area and big cottonwood trees over there, and elms, cottonwoods and elms. And so it was an interesting place, one that was not on a lot of tourist routes, that sort of thing.
Okay.
So it was very, very interesting and satisfying for people to discover the ranch on their own rather than be taken there on tours and that sort of thing. So enjoyed finding, you know, talking to people that discover it, and they enjoyed it very much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's where river trips through the Grand Canyon launched. Again, access to the river is hard to find in this country.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And of course, you knew that because you had been down there in 70, 71, 72 seasons.
Yes.
And later, launching river trips. So you were well familiar with the location.
Right, right. That one year for the Park Service, yeah.
Right.
Running.
Can you tell me how the water system worked in 1990?
Yes, right. One of the real challenges we had was drawing water out of the river.
Okay.
And pulling it in. We had just a channel dug down below river level that extended out into the river and filled with big rocks.
Okay.
And then a cistern that, the water came in and pumps in that cistern that would pump water to the water treatment plant. And then we had a complete water treatment plant, meaning filtration and chlorination, that sort of thing. You know, so we maintained a good, effective water treatment plant, and had plenty of capacity. We did well. The water tower itself was about 170,000 gallons. And That was good backup should there be a problem with the water, especially water intake.
Okay, so hang on a second.
Go ahead.
Let me make sure I understand this. There's you use a backhoe, I guess, and you trench out into the river, and you fill that full of rocks with a pipe down in there in the rocks, and that goes into a cistern, a big tank, and so that fills by gravity. By just water flowing into the tank from the river.
Just river level, whatever river level it was.
Right. And then there's a pump that probably sits like on the top of the tank and pumps water out of the tank. But that's going to have probably a sediment trap down there so you don't get too much sediment, I'm supposing, into.
That was a problem.
Oh, okay. So let's hold that on problem list number one. And then, so the pump from there goes over to the treatment plant.
Yes.
Now, at that time, there was a trailer. I think orientations for river trips were still happening in a trailer.
Yes.
And was the treatment plant next to that trailer? So kind of in the same area it is today.
Yes, it was.
Okay. And can you talk to me about how did you deal with sediment, that problem? And how did you chlorinate the water?
Right, okay.
Or filter it?
Sure. Well, generally, the river runs pretty clean when you pass Lee's Ferry, right?
Yeah.
When we do get thunderstorms and it floods into the river from other sources, the river gets very muddy. And that's a time when you do not want to have the water plant running. You do not want to be sucking water in to that cistern because it would silt up.
Okay.
And that was a problem that we had to watch carefully, you know, and be one of those things that you'd get out of bed at night and go turn the water plant off if you had a thunderstorm going on.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You try to prevent silt from building up.
Hey, let me back up a minute again. I forgot to ask this. So, water in the West is very precious and is distributed by a system of water rights.
Yes, correct.
And so if you take water out of the Colorado River, you have to have a water right for that.
Yes.
And and did Glen Canyon have a water right, or Grand Canyon National Park? Whose water right was being used to pull that water out?
It was Glen Canyon. There was one specified, water rights for Lee's Ferry.
Okay.
Right. So they were within that system, you bet.
Got it.
And never came close to exceeding the allotment.
Right. And of course, one would argue that the water that was taken out of the river would be used at that location and go back into the river. So in theory, there would be some of that. Of course, there would be evaporative losses and flooding the orchard and things like that.
Right.
That's
where a lot of water went, was the orchard, of course.
Okay.
In the summertime.
Okay. Right. All right. So when there was you were saying when there was a rainstorm, you saw that happen in the middle of the night, you'd drive down to the treatment plant and turn the pump off at the cistern.
At the water plant, you had control there.
Oh, okay.
So you'd go in and just shut down the water plant. Because very often you'd let it run overnight in the summertime.
Okay.
And you're using quite a bit of water.
Because the river runners would be down there early filling up 5-gallon jugs or what?
Yeah. River runners, campers.
Okay.
A lot of campers. That kind of stuff. And we didn't produce that much water. I called it making water.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't make more than about 35 gallons a minute.
That's a lot.
But you can use a lot in a hurry.
Right.
So we maintained a certain level in the water tank, in the water tower.
Okay.
And we watched that, and that pretty well determined our operations, how many hours we would operate.
So would there be a float, an on-off float mechanism in the tower, so when it got low, it would turn on the pump turn on the treatment plant to filter that water, treat it, and then get it pumped up into the tower, and then that tower water would go up, and then it would turn itself off? Is that how that worked?
No, it wasn't that automated. It was a manual thing.
Okay, so how did you do that?
There was a float in the tower.
Okay.
And a bullseye on the outside. It was just a mechanical thing.
Okay.
On a pulley outside, it would show us the water tank level.
Okay.
And after a while, you'd intuitively have an idea of when to turn the water plant on. And generally, almost every day, we'd run it for several hours.
Okay.
But at the same time, that same intake pump that pulled water out of the river from the cistern was also used to divert water to the orchard. So that pump ran a lot of hours.
So the orchard water wasn't treated. It was raw Colorado River water.
Yes, right. Raw water.
Got it.
Right. And we had a suspended pipeline over the Paria River. And that was always a challenge, hoping that flash floods would not take out that water line.
How high over the creek bed, over the Paria bed was it?
Well, the channel was pretty deep out behind the water plant, about 100 yards out from the water plant. We'd hit the channel, and we had a cable, sort of a bridge across there.
Okay.
A cable arrangement that carried a 6-inch water line, PVC water line.
Okay.
And as long as the supports on either side had not gotten washed away, they're in good shape. It carries it across there and then into a piping system.
Runs
to the orchard, not very far from the far side of the river.
Did that happen to you, that those supports got washed out?
No, after I left it did.
Oh, okay.
Just shortly after I left.
Huh.
And the orchard nearly died.
Oh, wow.
It took them a long time to decide to fix that water line. And they were using, some people were out there using some treated water, just trying to keep things going.
Mm.
And it took many, many months before they came in and put a water line underground, under the river channel.
Oh, wow.
And I guess it's deep enough that it's surviving pretty well now.
Wow, how did they do that? Because the Paria has a constant flow in it.
Right, yeah. I mean, it takes pretty fancy machinery. I didn't see it.
Huh,
I don't know.
Okay. Well, one of those underground bores that bores down and bends back up again?
I don't know. Might have been.
Huh, okay.
Yeah, right. But at least they do have that water line reestablished, have had for a few years now.
Okay.
But there was a volunteer that worked for the park that just worked his tail off keeping that orchard alive with a little bit of water he could get out of it.
Was that Alan Malmquist?
No. It was a fellow after Alan's time, and I never met him. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't remember his name.
Okay.
Guy from Page.
Okay.
Yeah, just took a liking to the orchard down there.
Nice.
And volunteered a lot of time.
I bet. Yeah. Okay. So how do you chlorinate the water? How do you filter the water?
Okay. Well, with a water treatment plant, all that is pretty well automated.
Okay.
You have pumps. Well, where do we start? You have a filtering system that filters out, big particles, then smaller particles, and even smaller particles, depending on the grain size of the sand in the filter. So it's a sand filter.
So that's a multi-stage filter?
Right.
Okay.
And you bring in the raw water, and it filters down through this, pumps into a neighboring chamber, a chlorination chamber, and then you have chlorinating equipment, liquid chlorine. Well, they use powder that we diluted with water and then pump that into the chlorinated water. Yeah. So it was a complete treatment plant, a small one. Again, 35 gallons a minute is a very small plant.
Okay.
But, a good working plant, which has been completely rebuilt since my time.
Okay.
We've got a new plant there, but it's still the same older technology, complete treatment plant. And I assume working really well.
So, Ken, recently on the North Rim, there was a fire a week or so ago, took out the North Rim wastewater treatment plant.
Wastewater.
Yeah. And there was chlorine stored there. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that chlorine was stored for the Roaring Springs chlorination that was happening there where the spring water comes out of the ground and is captured to go up to the North Rim and then across the canyon to the South Rim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Right.
And I had been told on another oral history that chlorination system was used big chlorine cylinders. And
chlorine cylinders.
Yeah, and and maybe I totally misunderstood that.
Right. Right. For the plant, for my sized plant. Well, sure, the cylinder would be very concentrated chlorine.
Okay.
In a high-pressure cylinder.
Okay. Yeah, like that's right. They said it
was a diving tank.
Yeah, exactly. That's how they described it. Was mm-hmm. like an oxygen acetylene kind of tank.
Right.
That had pressurized chlorine mm-hmm. in it.
Right, right. And that would be gaseous chlorine is how it would be fed into the water.
Okay.
So it would have a metering system. That kind of thing. So you're concentrating a lot of chlorine in one of those versus the granulated chlorine that I had.
Okay.
That was not that concentrated.
And so would you just kind of scoop scoop the chlorine out of a bag and put it in some sort of a hopper that would meter itself into the water? How did that work?
We had 55-gallon plastic tanks with small pumps on them.
Okay.
And we would pour in the granulated chlorine and then water to match the amount of chlorine we put in there to give us the concentration we wanted in that tank.
Okay.
And then we would meter that, feed that into the water system, the treated water.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we had a mixer rod that would stir up this water and dissolve the granulated chlorine.
Okay. So you basically made a liquid chlorine solution out of the out of water and granulated chlorine.
Yeah.
And then you would put a little of that in, meter that in at a time into the raw water to chlorinate it.
And into the treated water after it had been through the filtering system.
Yeah, sorry, the filtered water. Got it.
Yes. So it was filtered water that was on the way into actually an exterior holding tank where the water theoretically would sit there and the chlorine would do its work. The chlorine would settle into that holding tank, then pump it to the water tower, which was, as you know, what, a mile away? Something like
that. Yeah, and hundreds of feet up.
Right.
So yeah, there's a heavy lift there. 35
horsepower electric pumps.
How many horsepower?
35.
Okay.
Which is a big electric pump, but we needed it to pump it that several hundred feet to the water tower.
Right. So back up for a minute here. The filtered water that was chlorinated would go into a holding tank. That would allow the chlorine to kill bacteria.
Yes.
And it would then gas out. The chlorine would then gas out of the water.
Eventually, yes.
Yes, eventually.
Right.
So the water wouldn't taste like it was over chlorinated.
You sure hope not.
Yeah.
That was always a concern because it was a long ways from the water plant to the campground.
Okay.
You know, water traveled a long ways, and to maintain a residual chlorine in that water meant you put pretty strong chlorine into it as it left the plant.
Okay.
And at the same time, the water went out to the street and split, went to the water tower or to the launch ramp restroom.
Right.
So it was difficult to maintain a low chlorine residual at the launch ramp.
Oh wow! How did you?
Very far from the water plant.
Yeah. How did you deal with that?
We were able to do that. Actually, you know what I'm doing. I'm giving you a story. We had separate lines.
Okay.
A separate line that went to the water tower, and then it was distributed back down to the launch ramp, to the housing area, to the campground.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. Okay.
Yeah, that was better. Yeah, that's better.
So you could have a higher concentration of chlorine. It would blow off some in the holding tank. It would blow off more in the water tower?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then, yeah. And then it would go from there, further west, southwest, I guess, to the campground. It would go south to the residence areas and then back east, southeast to the, all the way back to the launch ramp, to the bathrooms there,
mm-hmm.
And the outdoor yard hydrant there for the river people.
So maintaining the required residual at the launch ramp and at the campground required, putting in maybe a little more than you wanted in the housing area.
Oh.
That kind of thing, because it was a much shorter run to the housing area.
Right, that's right. And
so
I imagine
it would gas off a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit.
You were testing at all three places for the chlorine level and make sure it was appropriate at least, if not too much?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And test the water tower itself once in a while. You wouldn't want that to be too low. That's a lot of water that you'd have to do with something. But,
oh, wow. And if it was too low, what would you do? You have to dump it and then make a whole new batch? I mean,
you would actually have to, almost superchlorinate a little bit. Never had to do that, though.
It
maintained pretty well.
Nice.
Even in the hot summer months. You know, we were running enough water through the tower that it stayed pretty cool, I think.
Yeah, because I guess it goes from the tower back into the ground and runs, and would, if it was hot, it would cool down some underground on its way back to the ferry and then over to the campground and out to the housing.
Yeah. But as you know, the water was pretty cold as we pulled it out of the river.
Oh, right.
Through the plant.
Okay.
And it was still pretty cool by the time it got to the water tower.
Right.
And that helped maintain the chlorine.
Okay.
Chlorine residual that you needed.
And the sand in the sand filters, how often would you replace that sand?
Once in the 15 years I was there.
Wow.
Not very often.
Okay.
We did what you'd call a backwash, which is pumping water in underneath all of the sand and pushing up through it and loosening up all of the particles, all of the stuff you had filtered out.
Okay.
You loosen that up and wash it away, dispose of it.
Oh, so you would set it up so that you would move water the other direction through the filter, and then that water that came up through the sand would just go outside and dump and go back to the river? Is that how that would work?
Right. Things changed while I was there. The EPA decided they didn't want us dumping that in. We dumped it out in the Paria before it joined the Colorado.
Yeah, but it was going right back to the Colorado.
They decided they didn't want that effluent in the Colorado River.
Oh, wow, but it came from the Colorado River.
Right, but it had all these particulates in it. And some chemicals were used to remove particles, that kind of thing.
Were you flocculating that water?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so was there like a...
put in a holding tank. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you were doing...
It was a settling tank. Yeah.
And then where... All right. So hang on. Wait. Now I'm gonna back up and I got a bunch more questions. So before the sand filtration, you had a flocculation unit, which typically uses alum for that?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, it was alum.
All right. And
that actually just clumped particles together so they were big enough to be trapped in the filter.
Okay. And then you would have to, where was that tank? Was that at the treatment plant?
Yes, it was all in the small treatment plant.
Okay. Right.
But, yes, you have to backwash the sand filter.
Okay.
And it just kind of floats everything and then comes up and the flocculated particles, end up now in a settling pond that they've got, just a big tank outside the plant, and it would settle there, and then once it settled, then you're allowed to pump that effluent into the Paria to pump that tank out.
Okay, so once the...
Eventually dry it out and shovel out all of those particulates.
And where would that go?
Settled out.
To a landfill somewhere?
That would have to go to landfill. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, so that makes sense. So you got you put in the alum. The alum grabs particulates. Those alum grab particulates are trapped in the sand, and so the water leaves the particulates and the alum and goes off to be chlorinated. You backflush that system, and then the particles with the alum get sent over to a big tank. The alum and the particles settle. The liquid in the tank gets dumped into the Paria. The tank is emptied, and the material at the bottom, the alum and the silt and whatever that's come in, is scooped up and taken to the landfill.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Did I miss anything?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. You didn't have to shovel it out very often. I don't even know how many years you might get between times you have to dry that tank out and shovel things out.
Okay.
Quite a while.
Okay.
Quite a while.
Yeah. All right. But that's how you did it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
So that would have taken a chunk of your time. Another thing that would have taken a chunk of your time, I suppose, is just the bathroom at Lee's Ferry, which got an awful lot of use. All the river runners going downstream in the summer and the tourists that drove in and the fishermen.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, I think about 70% of my job was just cleaning up behind people.
Okay.
And visitors. Mm-hmm. That restroom was first on the list every morning. You get down there and do a really good job cleaning it up. And either me or my seasonals are down there doing that. You bet.
And did you have to clean the campground too?
It depended. Generally not. We had volunteers in the campground.
Okay.
And they would handle the maintenance up there.
Okay.
Just about all the time. You know, very fortunate as far as I'm concerned.
Hmm.
To have those people available to do that.
The camp hosts?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, it was, yeah, camp host, but it was a working host job versus some, which is so nice, where you just walk around and deal with the people and don't mess with maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
But there, we handled the maintenance of the restroom, the two restrooms.
Okay.
And irrigated the trees, too.
And what was your schedule like there? Did you work before 10s, or how did that go?
We did 9 hour days, so every other week you got 3 days off. And that seemed to be a good schedule. Some start at 6 in the morning, work a 9 hour day. That was enough, especially in the summer when it got pretty warm down there.
Right. Okay. Right. So every day you have an extra hour. So after 8 days, you would have a day off.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Who, with your 3 days off, who took care of the place when you were off?
Yeah. In the wintertime, the place took care of itself pretty well.
Okay.
And I didn't have any seasonals in the winter. I think they do now, but I didn't have any help in the wintertime. So it sort of took care of itself. And you might touch up the restroom or something like that on a day off. It's not unusual to do that.
Okay.
And also maybe mess around with the water plant a little bit. It was more of a place that you took care of. It wasn't a job site.
Okay.
Yeah. That was kind of the approach down there. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But in the summertime, so you'd rely on your seasonals.
In the summertime, I had two or three seasonals in the summer. So
okay.
We overlapped the schedules and worked out fine.
Great. Yeah. Great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. That would have given you actually a breather, I would think,
mm-hmm.
To have those extra people down there. would be super helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've laid out an awful lot of work.
Yeah. For most of my tour down there, I had one seasonal. Excuse me. Yeah. Generally had just one seasonal. And then at some point, they gave me another one, which was nice.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't quite quick enough to ask for one, but they assigned one to sure help.
Nice. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because
we had seven campsites upstream between Lee's Ferry and the dam.
Okay.
And those campsites had fire grates in them, things like that.
Oh.
And restrooms also, porta potty kind of thing.
Okay.
Just restrooms that they put in, decided that to go with composting toilets at those restrooms.
Okay.
Darn, so anyhow, And those required maintenance. So that was, that kept you busy in the summertime also. Yeah. Maintaining those composting toilets, because if you didn't, they'd fail.
Ooh. That doesn't sound like fun.
No.
Cleaning up that.
Yeah. Right.
So that means you must have had a boat.
Yes. Yeah. Had a pretty nice boat.
Yeah?
Yeah. The chief of maintenance picked one out and sent it down there. And at first I thought, oh boy, I don't like this so much. But began to use it. And the maintenance staff at Raleigh built a shade for it. It was open.
Okay.
And they built up a framework and put a shade cover on it.
Oh.
That sure made a difference.
Nice.
But it was kind of a John boat, 22-foot aluminum thing, pretty light. And a Johnson 135 on it.
Oh, okay. So it moved.
2-stroke engine.
Huh.
But it was very, very efficient in terms of pollution.
Okay.
We're at that period where the Grand Canyon, decided they didn't want any 2-cycle engines going downstream because 4-cycle were a lot cleaner.
Right. Okay.
And actually, this thing, which they still have, I saw it just a year ago, still
really?
Have the same motor.
Okay.
Burn very cleanly, very, very clean.
Hmm. Okay.
But you'd have to go upstream, usually twice a week.
Okay.
And hit campsites. And hit one of the spots where the blue boats, the day trips from the dam down.
Yes.
Stop at the petroglyphs.
Okay. Yep.
Had 4 restrooms there. And for quite a while, we had to clean them. And then we were able to get Aramark to clean those 4 restrooms since they provided so much use. And that was, we were upstream quite a bit, of course, generally pretty good duty other than messing around with the restroom.
Okay. Yeah. And that makes sense to have the concessioner clean the bathrooms because it's their people that are getting them dirty.
Right, yeah, at that particular spot.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a lunch beach there when they were serving lunches and things. They had
okay.
A lunch beach.
Yep.
And they maintained that restroom most of the time, too.
Okay.
So it was very helpful. As far as I was concerned, and didn't have the time to put in to clean that. Cleaning those every day.
Right.
You just couldn't do it.
Yeah, I can already see that the potential to be overrun with maintenance duties there is pretty high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Like that worked well.
Okay.
And with 2 seasonals, I was in good shape.
Okay.
You could take care of those things, handle the orchard. And, again, long tramp restroom was a big deal, big priority all of the time. That was a system that worked pretty well. Spent a lot of time in the orchard.
Okay.
Both winter and summer. I'd be out there pruning all winter long.
Wow.
Lucky to get everything pruned before it blossomed out too much, and I had too many bees buzzing around while I was pruning.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What would you do with the bits of tree that you pruned? Where would they go?
Right. Well, I don't know if we talked about that or not, but there were plans to build a hotel down at Pretty Beach. And the Park Service went so far as to put in a lift station and then run pipeline all the way up to that, a boneyard or a maintenance yard where they had created 2 settling ponds for the anticipated waste from that motel they were putting in.
Okay, so.
Which they never did put in.
So hang on a second.
They had those 2 big scooped out areas, and that's where I would pile up brush.
Okay, let me make sure I understand this right.
Again,
the reason why those 3 houses are up on that hill is the same reason why this hotel at the mouth of the Paria was going to be up on a bluff as well, with its sewage system going into tanks and a pump system, and the tank and the pumps are still there. And then that pipe went up into the hills, crossed the road coming in from Highway 89A, crossed the paved Lee's Ferry Road, and went up. There's a gate there, and a road goes up into a side canyon. And I did not realize there are settling tanks up there.
Yeah, there are two settling ponds.
Okay. And that was for the hotel sewage.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The sewer system. And I think the campground was going to be tied into it also.
Okay.
The idea. They were going to increase the campground loops from 1 to 3.
Oh, wow.
Campground loops also. And, yeah, had quite some serious development plans there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 3 loops. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I guess if there was a reservoir there from the downstream dam, then there would be people out there on boats and they would be camping, and so it would make sense to have more loops.
Well, there's that, yeah, but they were just going to build them anyway.
Yeah.
So we put that brush in those ponds.
Okay.
And we collected a lot. You know, I mean, you pruned a lot off those trees.
Mm.
And we would be pruning around the campsites a little bit upstream.
Okay.
Haul some stuff down there. But would accumulate quite a bit. And at one point, I decided I needed to burn that.
Okay. You know, makes sense.
Pretty good piles there. And went to the fire people in Flagstaff and fire people in the county and that sort of thing, saying, do I need a permit for this sort of thing? Or may I get a permit?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we don't offer that. You might go to this person. We tried that at 3 or 4 different agencies and just got nowhere.
Hmm.
So I had what I call the boneyard burn, usually in October.
Okay.
Nice quiet night, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Invite the neighbors and go up there and set this stuff on fire and have a heck of a bonfire.
Wow.
Once a year. Up there.
And would you let dispatch know, saying, hey, we're going to have this fire up here, just want you to know?
Nope, didn't tell them.
Okay.
Well, a few times I did, but
okay.
Not too often.
Okay.
Didn't want the word to get out that much.
Okay.
But certainly went out to the local resorts and that sort of thing, it might see the glow.
Oh, so Marble Canyon Lodge knew.
Don't worry about that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And who would you invite over?
Park staff who was over there.
Okay.
Rangers, you know, my maintenance crew. Anybody, you know, it was just park staff.
I mean, would you invite them to bring marshmallows and steaks or?
Oh, yes. Marshmallows and whatever. But boy, those were good fires.
Oh, wow.
They were all right. You had to keep moving back. Had a folding chairs.
Wow.
As it got hotter, you moved further away. You know.
Well, it's interesting because I just think there's nothing around to burn. It's, you know, there's an occasional black brush or a small little yellow flower here
right,
and there.
Right.
But it's a perfect place to have a fire like that. You're not going to have any incendiary bombs dropping anything on, lighting on anything on fire.
Right. And generally, well, almost always a calm night, no wind.
Okay.
Have a bunch of stuff blow away.
Sure.
Yeah, right.
That makes sense.
So, entirely safe, yes. And very enjoyable, too. It's just great to see a big fire like that.
Yeah.
Fun. Back, you know, tell stories.
And how long did you stay there at Lee's Ferry from the December, January, 1990, 1991? How long were you there?
I was there 15 years.
15 years. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that goes to 2005.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you mentioned when you first arrived there, there was a Grand Canyon law enforcement ranger named Tom Workman.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What do you remember about Tom?
Well, I've known Tom quite a while.
Oh.
From the days at Grand Canyon. In fact, I took him on his first river trip.
Okay.
When I ran that summer for the Park Service.
Yeah.
And Tom had just gotten a job at the ferry, and Park Service wanted him to get downstream at least once before checking out the river trips. Yeah.
So this was in 1975.
Yes.
So by the time you showed up, he'd been there 15 years.
Yes, right. I don't know if I beat his record or not. I might have.
Okay.
You know, we're both there about 15 years. Then he moved on.
Okay.
Yeah, we only worked with him 1 year before he moved out.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, that's where one of the faces on the water tower came from. It was my idea.
Let's open this up. What exactly are you talking about?
Okay. Well, Tom's going away party was coming up. He was going to leave. And I had, we didn't have anything on the water tower. I had painted out the really excellent sunglasses that had been there.
Wait. Tell me about the really excellent sunglasses. Let's go back to the beginning of this story.
Right. Well, there were two sets of sunglasses were painted on the water tower.
When did the first set get painted?
Oh, boy. Had to be about 92, something like that.
Okay.
91, 92.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, there was a certain pattern to it. After a dark night, you'd get up in the morning and hear the face on the water tower. Not even after a moonlit night, but after a dark night, mm-hmm. one up there. And I was instructed to paint that one out, so I did.
Okay. So hang on a second. Can you describe to me the first face? I just remember the sunglasses. I don't remember a nose or a smiling, a mouth. Right. I just remember the sunglasses.
Yeah. Well, the first one, the sunglasses were great, weren't they?
Yeah.
They reflected light in the lenses and things.
Yeah,
like
there
that.
Was a little sparkle. Somebody had painted in mm-hmm. a little sparkle kind of off the
right.
sunglasses.
Right. Well, the first one, to my mind, looked like a canoe with two people in it. But actually, it was a smile. It was a smiley face.
Okay.
And a few colors and eyes and that sort of thing. And again, I was instructed to paint it out. Okay. And down in the corner, here's a little inscription. Hey, Dude Lives, of course. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So who gave you the instructions to paint it out? Who would have been the head of maintenance?
It would have been the superintendent or chief of maintenance, one of the two.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I painted that first one out, and then say 7 months later, up come the sunglasses that you saw.
Okay, wait a minute. Back me up a bit. So who do you suspect would have painted the first one?
Okay, well, what I learned... Oh, it had to be a year and a half later. It was a Hatch Boatman guy who was a commercial artist from Chicago. And he just decided that middle of the night, go up there when it's dark, and
right.
figure out how to put these things up there. Right.
Okay. And clearly they took their time.
Yes.
This wasn't a rushed job. And it must have been done fairly quietly, like with, cans of paint and brushes. You just open those things up. And do you think they took a ladder up there to get up a little higher? How did they reach up that high?
Well, we had was about 9-10 feet to the first rung of a permanently affixed ladder.
Okay.
That was on there. So you probably brought an 8-foot ladder with you.
Okay.
Get up to that first rung, and then it was a steel ladder all the way on up.
Yeah. Well, there was a kind of a gang plank or a with a little railing that went around
the all the way around
water
yes.
tower.
Mm-hmm.
But right. this, I remember that face. It looked like you'd have to be super tall to reach way up there to get to the top of that sunglasses. Do
right.
you think they had a little ladder up there with them to get up higher?
Yeah, there was a ladder on the water tower.
Oh.
And it was on rollers and tied by a loop up to the top, so it fit the shape of the water tower.
Okay.
And you could roll it around that walkway you're talking about.
Oh, brilliant.
So you had access. Yeah, had access. That's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Right.
And I'm assuming that to paint that would have taken some hours.
I'm sure it did.
And mm-hmm. and so you'd go up at 9 or 10 once it was well and truly dark and park at the base of the tower where the there was a visitors information center that was closed.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so we parked there and then just walk on over and climb on up and carry up a backpack full of paints and get to work.
I said, yes. Yeah, that's pretty much the way it goes.
Okay.
Yeah, the way it went.
So right. This Hatch Boatman, who was a commercial artist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes. Right.
Did you ever get their name?
No, never did.
Okay.
Never did, yeah.
So,
really liked those sunglasses.
Yeah. How long were they up before you had to go up and paint them?
It was again another 2 or 3 months before I was pressured to do that.
Okay.
You know, I wanted to leave them there.
Right.
And by this time, we were beginning to get complimentary letters from people that just left on a river trip. The last thing they saw of Lee's Ferry were these sunglasses on the water tower.
Wow.
I thought that was pretty neat.
Huh?
Right.
Okay.
So it was an attraction.
Yeah. Yeah. And it said, Hey Duke Lives up there in the corner. Okay.
Yep, in the corner.
Nice.
And then Tom got a transfer. Tom was leaving. And I liked the idea of a face on there and stuff like that. And Tom was quite a ladies' man. Right? He always had a girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff. So I thought I would put a face up there.
Okay.
And got a hold of a commercial artist local here, and outlined what I wanted to see, which would be, you know, a lady's eyes with eyelashes and red lipstick and this sort of stuff. And the little thing says, goodbye, Tom. So, got that artwork done and decided I'm no artist. So I got some big sheets of this screen out and laid this out. I had the artist gave me a grid to put this on.
Okay.
And so I put that grid on this plastic and said, that'll do that. Cut it out, you know, and come up with the colors and that sort of thing. Had a very adventurous girlfriend at the time. And so a week and a half before Tom's going away party, he did the same thing. Dark night, walked across the street with a ladder and climbed the water tower and got up there. I took a bunch of duct tape and I was going to tape my creation, you know, this plastic on the water tower, and then we'd fill it in. Well, we got up there, and the paint was very chalky on that stuff. Tape would not stick to it.
Oh.
And it was too big. It overlapped a couple of the pillars that supported the tank. It just wasn't right. So, doggone, down the ladder we go, you know, and say, well, we got one more week to make this work. So I recut it, made it smaller, and then wrapped some grape stakes in the top with some rope, and went back again, you know, the next week.
Okay.
And it was, you know, got out of bed at 11 o'clock at night and headed across the street with our paint and climbed the water tower and hooked it up, tied it to the vent pipe up at the top of the water tower and just draped over the tower like a curtain.
So the problem was, well, if I get this right, you made a stencil kind of thing.
Yes.
And in order to paint the stencil, you had to hold the stencil up and
right.
you couldn't and take it, tape it to
place.
The paint because it would peel off. So
right.
you tied it to the top of the, mm-hmm. Of the mm-hmm. tank. Using that little mobile ladder?
Yeah. So
okay.
Using the mobile ladder, I did the top half while a friend of mine did the bottom half.
Oh, what a good idea.
Yeah. And it was cold. It was 35 degrees that night.
Whoa.
It was pretty cool. But we stayed busy and got down and walked back into my house at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Well, it took you most of the night.
Yeah, we were up there a long time.
Wow.
Long time, yeah. But looked good. If you've never seen a picture of it, yeah.
It looked great, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Looked really good. And it stayed there a long time. And
what did Tom think?
Yeah, he thought it was great. He liked it, yeah, of course.
Cool.
He liked it.
Oh, and did you write in small letters, "Goodbye, Tom," on there or something?
Sort of like a balloon, you know, in a cartoon.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a little "Bye, Tom" on there. And that became the downfall of that painting.
Oh.
It was going to stay up quite a while. The superintendent by then said, you know, let's just leave it there. Doesn't seem to be a problem. But the ranger there said he got tired of answering the question, "Who's Tom?"
Oh, wow.
And pushed the chief ranger and others to request that I take it down. But another. And had I been inventive, I could have just painted out the "Bye, Tom."
Right.
Paint out the "Tom," leave the "Bye" on there. You know. But I didn't, so I had to paint it out after about 5 months, 6 months.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So if you looked closely today, you should still be able to see those bumps of that paint under the other.
The water tower has been painted once since then.
Okay.
But it's commercial paint, so it cleans everything out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Although they did leave the little "Hey Duke Lives" up there. I think it's still there.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think so. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. That's just lovely.
Yeah, that cost me a week without pay for having done that.
How did you get caught?
I had a seasonal that didn't like me. He wanted my job.
Oh.
So we went to the park and told him I did it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well. It's worth a week without pay.
Oh, well. Mm-hmm. It was well worth it.
Yeah. 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 Well worth it. Huh.
Yeah. My dad, who was still alive at the time, thought it was one of the neatest things I ever did. Yeah.
How cool is that?
That was good. Yeah. And again, more complimentary letters were coming in from river runners.
Uh-huh.
I like it. And in fact, some of the pilots bringing river runners into Page would divert around the ferry to show them that face.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Huh. Huh. Well, it's certainly a large canvas. And,
yes.
You know, most towns put their names up there. You know, maybe it needs Lee's Ferry, Arizona up there or something like that. Established 1869, something like that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, 1871, I guess. It was 1872, I forget. One of those years. I figured out.
Right.
Or established 10,000 B.C. as the first river crossing or something. I don't know, whatever.
Sure. <right. laughs> Well, I had an idea that went nowhere, but I thought, well, okay. You know, the superintendent and others think this is a dangerous deal, do it in the middle of the night. You know, people are doing these things. And had one assistant super that said, graffiti begets of more graffiti. Well, all of those faces that were up there were never modified by anybody else.
Hmm.
You know, they'd be up there a couple of months, and nobody would go up and change them. And
right,
all that. So
right.
That wasn't true. You know, people were just leaving them alone. So I fantasized about having a contest among local people to draw a face or a pattern or something. And then once a year, at my own time and expense, go up there and paint it on the water tower and change it out once a year.
Wow.
But that didn't get anywhere. That didn't go any place.
That's a good idea.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
I think it'd be a lot of fun. You know, take a lot of paint.
Huh. Yeah, it would. But you know, I mean, if people actually painted a big white area, and then they painted their design on the white area, the park wouldn't have to pay to paint that area, so it would be a cost savings for the park. They just have to paint the rest of it.
Right, right. But anyway, yeah, that was one of the entertaining things we did, and it was just the day before Tom's going away party out at the Hatch Warehouse.
Oh my gosh! Okay.
So I'm glad we got it up there. The timing was pretty good.
Nice. Well done. And then, thinking about time, Tom was there for, 15, 16 years? You were there for the same or a little more than him?
Mm-hmm, right.
And then Peggy Kolar was a ramp ranger, a law enforcement at Grand Canyon National Park. She wanted to stay there longer than Tom had.
I think she did.
And I think she did. So
probably
yeah.
longer than I did.
Yeah. So that... That record of long-term staying at the ferry now goes to Peggy.
It's probably hers, yeah. Probably Peggy.
K-O-H-L-A-R, I think is how you spell her last name. Okay. All right. We've been visiting for a little over an hour here. I wonder if this is a good place to put a comma in this interview series. I do want to ask you about... The orchard and the buildings there and what you did on your days off and the people that you met there. So would like to do at least one more visit on your time at Lee's Ferry.
Mm-hmm.
In the material that we've covered, is there anything else you want to add?
No. I don't think so. I think that... The routine was pretty good, pretty well established down there, at least while I was there. Didn't do any major projects other than putting in the composting toilets upriver and that sort of thing. About the only big change that took place while I was there. You know, built a duplex, a nicely done duplex for Grand Canyon. And Grand Canyon permanent rangers.
Okay.
They added positions down there.
So that was housing by where you were on the bluff?
Yes. All okay. Up there.
Hey, Ken, well then while we're at it on this interview, let's talk about the composting toilets. Those need to be, was that where the solid waste and liquid waste goes into a container and then you have to kind of rotate the containers, there's a line of them underneath there, and you keep rotating it around until finally the first container that was full of basically sewage now has decomposed enough that you can shovel it out with a shovel. Is that right?
Right. Well, the system worked quite well, and the base material was sawdust.
Okay.
Put a bunch of wood shavings, not really sawdust, but wood shavings
okay.
in there. And if you kept it damp and stirred, you'd have to sort of crawl underneath there and with a small pitchfork stir everything up.
Okay.
And not let it get backed up too much.
Okay.
And keep it damp. That composting would go on for years. It'd go a long time. And there's a grate underneath this sawdust that would allow liquids to go on through. And if you're far enough from the river, then you would have a discharge pipe just out in under the sand, 4 foot deep pipe
mm-hmm.
that would allow the liquids to spill out into the sand.
Okay.
Underneath.
So down below the water level.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Below the level in the composter. So. Keeping it damp and keeping it stirred was the order of the day.
Okay.
And
then when you did have to...
A couple of trips a day, week up the river to each one of the campsites and stir this stuff up.
Yeah. When you did have to remove the wood chips, where did you put that and how did you get rid of it?
I never had to.
Okay.
Once in a while you'd add sawdust, you'd have to add some.
Okay.
Because it was composting down to almost nothing.
Oh, okay.
But never had to remove it, anything. And I think it'd go on for years if you maintained the place.
Okay.
Maintain them.
Huh.
But it took effort, took time in carrying water, you know, up there, pumping it in.
Did you have to take some sort of a crane or something up there to get these things into position, or did you build them from small little pieces right on site?
They were a fiberglass unit. We contracted out, the park contracted, and have them installed.
Okay.
But it would be shoveling out a hole in the ground about 5 feet deep and 10 feet across, something like that, if that big. And then it would sit in there.
Okay.
This bucket underneath that has the sawdust and everything else.
Okay.
And then they look just like the regular porta potty you see around.
Okay. Yeah. And were they flown in by helicopter? Or, I mean, you think they'd be pretty heavy, right?
They were by boat. They were just, you know, contractor moved them up there by boat.
Okay.
Get a few people to help carry them up there.
All right. Yeah. So not as heavy as I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right. And they're pretty successful. As long as you maintain them, they were very successful.
Nice.
Yeah. Didn't stink, which is nice.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Which reminds me, since you mentioned that the liquid was going into the river, reminds me of the Carl Hayden Visitor Center and the Page Wastewater Treatment Plant, which on occasion when there was a big storm might send, at least the rumor mill says it might send raw sewage right on over the cliff edge and down into the river.
Right.
And then there's a virus that impacts people on the river called norovirus.
Yes, indeed.
And that can come in from someone who's sick and serving at a restaurant that a river runner would eat at before their river trip started, and so they would be positive,
sure.
And they would then get sick on the river. There's any number of ways to bring that virus to the river.
Right.
Did you have any thoughts on where that virus generation was coming from?
Yeah. Well, I had one period, probably my low point at the ferry was when we had a pretty serious outbreak downstream, and the Grand Canyon Ranger, Mike McGinnis, I think, not necessarily panicked, but made a deal out of it and called the CDC.
Okay.
Said, hey, we've got a problem with norovirus downstream, you know, this sort of thing. And they're looking for the source. So CDC sent a couple of guys out, and they focused on me and my water treatment system.
Oh.
And they figured it's probably sourced at the ferry.
You know,
huh. Sort of thing. And it was a tough time as they were there. And then they discovered they could go on river trips and test the water downstream.
They would like that.
So, of course, they did that for 2 or 3 years running.
Okay.
You know, running river trips and testing the water. And they tested upstream and found some, but not much.
Okay.
But did test it. And this went on for about 2.5-3 months. They were there. And I was expecting to shoot a drop at any time. That might be, you know, our pit toilets there at, our, you know, septic systems at the launch ramp restroom, for instance.
Right.
Might be leaching into the river.
Ah.
Like that. But they never said anything conclusively.
Okay.
And went away. And about 3 months after that, I was informed that what had happened is that there is a small wastewater treatment plant in the dam itself.
Yes.
Because of the restrooms that they have
yep.
there. And those restrooms would produce so much effluent, they would overcome the capacity of their treatment plant. And they dumped raw sewage into the river at the dam. And that's where probably that outbreak of norovirus took off.
Okay.
You know, downstream. But nobody told me that until months afterwards.
Mm. Okay.
So I still was feeling that I was a target.
Okay.
And as one river runner described it to me, he says, it's all in the handshake.
Oh, isn't that nice? Yeah, it's good, really good point.
Yeah, people Now, you can be contagious for up to 2 weeks after you've had it.
Oh, really?
And people come in, you know, bring it with them from, like you say, a restaurant or something.
Yep.
On a river trip and contaminate the rest of the folks on that trip.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was a tough time for me after Perry.
Mm. And that would have been 1998 or 1999-ish, 2001-ish. Okay.
Yeah. I think they're having close to 100 cases reported off the river. It was just a lot.
Yeah.
It led to, I think, better sanitation when it came to the river trips themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
And it's still a trouble today.
Call in the kitchen and such things.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's still every summer. This is actually first sparked up in the 1950s. You can see it in the River Runners journals. They talk about people getting sick.
Right. Yeah. When I ran for Sanderson's that first summer.
Yep.
One person got sick on our trip. And then we were informed that a trip behind us and a trip in front of us had quite an outbreak on that.
Okay.
That was just one time, though. One river trip.
But right.
We had one young guy get sick. And he was uncomfortable.
Yeah. Mm, yeah. Yeah.
Pretty bad.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Well, with that, then, let's conclude part 9. Of a Grand Canyon Oral History interview with Ken Hawkins. Today is Sunday, July 20th, 2025. My name is Tom Martin, and Ken, thank you so very much.
Well, thank you. You covered some ground today. Yeah.